The Lord be with you.
And
with a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no fuller on earth could bleach them. Then Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were conversing with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. Then a cloud came, casting a shadow over them. From the cloud came a voice, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone with them. As they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone, except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what rising from the dead meant. The Gospel of the Lord. Yeah, it's a powerful gospel passage. It's always this second Sunday of Lent, we hear the Transfiguration. And I don't exactly know why. I'm working on it, though. So you get the fruit of my labors here in trying to understand why it is we celebrate the Transfiguration this second Sunday of Lent. And you know, it's not like there are not answers. I just don't like them. So it's like, surely that's not it. That doesn't satisfy. So, but there are any number of important things for us to pay attention to in this gospel passage. I am somewhat distracted by the way the passage closes, because it's clear, coming down from the mountain, Jesus says to them, "Don't tell anyone until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." He's talking about his own resurrection. And the disciples are like, "What does rising from the dead mean? Right? We don't know, what does that mean?" And I'm distracted on it. I'll give you a point or two, is that no one ever expected, say, the Messiah to rise from the dead. Even though that's like a perhaps the central piece of the Christian proclamation in the early church. Go back to the preaching of the apostles. It's the Messiah, Jesus, raised from the dead. But no one was expecting it to happen. Why was no one expecting it to happen? Because the Messiah was not supposed to die, least of all at the hands of Israel's enemies. And here the pagan Romans put him to death. That's the line, at least, right? So this doesn't make any sense. And even just, anyway, like I said, I'm distracted by it. I love talking about the resurrection. Easter will give us ample opportunity to do it. But just to say one word there, right? Why is it that the Christian proclamation is the Messiah risen from the dead? Even though no one expected that to happen, even though no one would have seen that as proof, it's because it happened and it changed the world and still does change the world. And that's part of why we see its inclusion in this passage. And also because we're journeying, as we make our journey through Lent, we're journeying, yes, through the valley way here, the down from the mountain way, right, our way in Lent. It's marked out by the revelation of the glory of God in and as Jesus, but it's a valley way. We're following his way, but we come down off the mountain, but we have to remember we're headed toward Easter. We should remember here, we're headed towards Easter. So our entire practice of this penitential season has to be oriented to Easter. It has to keep in mind the glory of God, not just seen in himself, radiating through Jesus, his every pore, but also the fact that we were made for glory. We were made for glory. We were made to share in Jesus' own risen life. And we have to keep our hearts focused, fixed on that reality, or our penitential practices come to naught. We live for him, our crucified and risen Messiah. So, okay, more to do with the transfiguration. What we hear is that Jesus revealed his glory as God. We see the glory of the transfiguration as something that would hold the disciples over as they experienced the trials and travails that they were going to face, especially Jesus's death, his crucifixion. The challenge with that explanation is that the disciples all run away. It didn't do all that much for them. They ran away, and yet they record this as a central turning point event in Jesus's own life and ministry. What is that? I think we can see what it is by who it is that appears along with Jesus in the scene. See Moses and Elijah. Moses and Elijah represent the law and the prophets, right? The great tradition of Israel, representing the great vocation of Israel. We have to remember what Jesus' own commentary on the law and the prophets is, or at least how he uses the law and the prophets. I remember when he's approached by the person asking him, by the scholar of the law, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And he says, what is it? To love the Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. On these two hang the law and the prophets. And here, alongside of Jesus, in consultation with him, are Moses and Elijah, the law and the prophets. What could they be confirming him in except for the way that he was to walk, no matter what? And the way that he was to walk, no matter what, was going to be love of God. Heart, mind, soul, and strength. And love of neighbor as self. Jesus would come down off the mountain, having communed gloriously with God to the point that he would radiate his glory, even to his clothes shining brightly, such that no fuller on earth could bleach, and put into action the glory of God, coming down off the mountain, having communed with God in that tremendous way, to live the life that he there commits to, that he there sees and experiences as God's own life of love. Which is again, right? Love of God, love of neighbor as self. This is, my friends, the Lenten way. Did I miss a part? I didn't miss a part, because I can go back, right? So, no. No, don't go back. Yes. This is a marvelous revelation of who Jesus is. Why is it, in my estimation, why is it that Peter, James, and John have access to it? Right? One is, of course, the call. They're called. But two is, they're led up a high mountain apart from themselves. So they're led up a high mountain. Now, the mountain is a place of closeness to God. In the scriptures, we see that. And some of you may experience that yourselves, right? You say, yeah, I mean, I love going on hikes. I love reaching, you know, the crest of the hill, the top of the mountain. There's something about that that's just so special. I feel close to God in those times. Yeah, that's right. I don't know why that's right, but that's right. Jesus takes them up the mountain. Have you ever seen any of these mountains that people propose? That's the mountain of the Transfiguration. There's like two of them that compete for like, that's probably the one that it was. Have you ever seen them? They're massive mountains. They're steep. They're treacherous. You don't want to go up. I mean, I don't want to go up them. I personally don't want to go up them. I go up them in a car. And even that's scary over there. That's scary. The mountain of the Transfiguration. They say that journey to the top of the mountain of Transfiguration is the most prayerful time in anyone's life. Because you're so concerned you're going to fly off the side of the mountain. Everyone's just praying, please God, let me get up there, right? This is a tough and treacherous road that the disciples had to walk in order to experience the glory of God. What is that? They had to go beyond themselves. They had to look beyond themselves. They had to trust Jesus sometimes in that craggy mountain every step of the way. Every step of the way they had to trust Jesus. They take this path and that path, and each one seems more dangerous than the next. And every step of the way they're giving themselves over to Jesus. Every step of the way they're growing in trust for him, because they have to. He's leading the way. He's leading them up the mountain. And it's being habituated to going outside of themselves that then allows them, primes the pump, as it were, to have them see the glory of God that is nothing other than love. If they were all wrapped up in themselves, how would they ever see it? And more to the point, how would they ever be able to participate in it? And that's a big part of our Lenten journey as well. Yeah, we take on difficult penances so that we can grow in love of God, of neighbor, and true love of self, that we can experience conversion along all those lines. And it requires effort. Why? Because you have to go beyond yourself. Stay stuck in yourself. It's death. It's death. There's no way out. We have to go beyond ourselves. We have to go beyond ourselves in love. Okay, now, Jesus, again, commits to that path of love sincerely, right, all the way through is Jesus' life. And we're about to see, as we make this Lenten journey, all the way to the end, the cross. All the way through, every step of the way, and all the way to the end, he's living love of God and neighbor as self. This is the challenging part for us. You are baptized people, are you not? Yeah? You're baptized people. Jesus' own life of love is in you. It's in you. What is it going to look like? Now, I'm not saying, what do you want it to look like? What do you want? How do you want Jesus' life to take effect in you? That's not the question. The question is, how will the life of Jesus take effect in you? How does Jesus want his life to take effect in you? He wants you to live his life the way that he committed to, the way that he was confirmed in here on the mountain, the way that he walked every step of the way, mountain to valley, to the hill, to the ground, and up again. He wants us to persevere in that way. And if it sounds impossible to live a life of love all the way through and all the way to the end, that's because it is. That's because it is. It's because you can't do it of your own strength. I can't do it of my own strength. It's only by going outside of myself and trusting myself to Jesus, following him every step of the way, that we can do it. And that is, it's the life. It's not, my friends, it's not a choice anymore. It's not a choice for us anymore. It's a compulsion. You have to. You have to. Because anything else for you is death. Anything else for you, anything other than the way of love that Jesus pioneers and calls us to persevere in with him, any other way is death for us. It's a dead-end street. This is the only way that leads to life. The only way. We've already been called. We've been summoned by him to live in his service, to turn over our whole heart and our whole life to him, and to give ourselves recklessly away in his service. We've been called to live the life of love that he lived. And he will make it so. He will make it possible. But it's ours to trust and follow him. This is the big thing, right? This is the big thing. This is the mountaintop experience. This is the crowning achievement. This is the glory of God we're talking about. And it's also the valley road. From top to bottom. From life to death, and through death into life, it's the only way. It's the only way. Where are we not rising to the challenge? Where am I not loving? Where am I not persevering in the way that Jesus walked? Where am I not loving God? Where is my life not focused on the love of God? Where am I not yet surrendered to him and his way? Where am I not yet bringing his forgiveness, his mercy to bear in the world? Good for you if you can identify it. Because that's where Jesus wants to be, to have you join him on the way today. That's where Jesus wants to renew you today so that you can persevere in his way, in all things, in all things. And that's the whole point of Lent in the end, right? Isn't it? That we're journeying with Jesus. We're journeying with Jesus. And he's done it all. He's done the impossible. And now it's ours, through and with and in him, to live into what is now possible for us.